Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Petrified Podcast. I'm your host, Damian Martinez, here with my co-host,
Eric Lover.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you liked last week's episode of Circus of the Dead. And this week we got two movies for you. We're doing Evil Dead, the 1981, and Evil Dead, the 2013. We're going to do a review, compare and contrast, see what, you know, what similarities they had and what new things were brought to the table. And if you haven't seen that movie, sorry about you. Where you been at?
where you been since 1981?
But no, before we get started, though, please follow us on Instagram. Link will be in the description of this episode. And please share this podcast with all your friends, family, and strangers. It really helps us out. Try to get this thing started and rocking and rolling. But now let's get into The Evil Dead 1981, written and directed by the Sam Raimi, and produced by Rob Tappert, and starring Bruce Campbell, of course, as Ash J. Williams.
What's the J stand for?
Jesus.
Jesus, he's awesome.
I forgot what the J stands for.
I looked. I couldn't find it.
I think it's like Joseph or something, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
It's like just literally a basic name. But I must say it's Jesus because he's the savior of the Evil Dead universe.
Of all of us.
I'm going to butcher this name. Ellen Sandweiss. As Cheryl, Ash's sister.
Wait till we get to Scott.
Richard DeManicor.
DeManicor.
Yeah, DeManicor.
As long as it's not a manticore.
DeManticor. As Scott. Betsy Baker, who we're going to see at Texas Frightmare. In 2 weeks, or a little less than 2 weeks.
A week?
A week, almost. Yeah. Like a week and 2 days.
A week and 2 days.
Yeah, so.
Count it down, everybody.
That's why we decided to do these two movies, too. We got Betsy Baker as Linda, Teresa Tilly as Shelley, and a bunch of Fink Shemps everywhere. Yeah, if you just go to the, like, if you just watch the whole credit roll.
Yeah.
It is just fake Shemp after fake Shemp after fake Shemp. Because if you haven't seen the movie, or if you've never seen like any of the commentary of the movie, or like some of the like the, of course, great documentary to watch on Evil Dead is Hell to the Deadites. It talks about the fans, the franchise, and all that. But they had 6 weeks to shoot. Sam had 6 weeks to shoot the movie. Of course, it went like over that. It was like what, 19 weeks?
Maybe 12 weeks.
12 weeks.
12 weeks of filming.
12 weeks. So after the 6 weeks. Most of the crew was like, all right, we're done. Like, that's it.
We're very similar to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where everybody was kind of like, hey, we've lived out our contract, and we want union scale, you know?
Yeah. So. Mind you, these were like nobodies, though,
this movie was obviously, I mean, it was shot on a shoestring budget. It wasn't,
yeah,
you know,
very, very shoestring, but, yeah, so they had very, but I mean, there was like a lot, like what, 13 crew members just crammed into the cabin where it was shot in Tennessee. And so, yeah, I can understand why. I can understand why some of them left. Why most of them left.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine you get on each other's nerves, like living in those closed quarters.
Yeah.
Really, technically, you know, they're all riding around in that decrepit car that, that Sam Raimi brought to, you know, brought to the table.
The Delta, man. That's the most iconic car.
Yeah.
Besides Christine, that is probably one of the most iconic cars.
Yeah, but see, Christine really hasn't appeared in like multiple different movies.
Two.
Yeah.
That I know of, too.
Yeah, the Delta 88, I mean, was in the show and everything. So you have to give credit to the, you know, the Delta 88.
Yeah,
so.
Delta was in, of course, all the Evil Deads, Army of Darkness.
Yeah, all three of them.
And it was in the show. It was in the new one.
Yeah.
Well, they swapped it
in between two different. They had, I forget what model they had for the show. It was, I think it was a Delta 87. I think I have it written down. No, it was a different car, though, for the show. They had two different cars.
Yeah. So. But, yeah, I mean, it's just an icon. It's in Spider-Man. It's in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's Uncle Ben's car.
Yeah, it's in a very underrated horror movie that I hope we do on this podcast one day is, you know, Drag Me to Hell. Very underrated. I love that movie, man. And, of course, it's in that movie, too. It's in a lot of movies that Sam Raimi has done. And so is Bruce Campbell. He's in a lot of movies that he's done as well. But, yeah, I mean, oh, man, it's just such a great, iconic film. They wanted to pay tribute to Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, they already had the low budget, so they already paid it right there.
Yeah.
You know, they had the crew members leaving, this and that. But one thing I think that's different is that the friendship that pretty much Bruce Campbell and, you know, all the Raimi brothers kind of had, still do, most likely. They all went to school together and, you know, shot Super 8 films and all that. So, I mean, they had a history. They were, like, destined pretty much to do film, whether it be Evil Dead or not, but they were, like, pretty much, like, made to do this. And they, of course, they wanted Bruce on camera because he was the most
He was dreamy.
He was the most good looking.
with that unibrow.
Yeah, man, but it just, the way it was shot, the way they did things, using the pretty much like the 2x4s to
drag it through the swamp.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, get that, you know, like the dry ice. And the fact that, like, actually, you know, doing the research for, you know, our review this week, the fact that Bruce Campbell was just an intricate part in so much of, like, the making of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I always knew he had, like, you know, some behind-the-scenes stuff going on. But then, like, I mean, the fact that, you know, you read into the fact that he actually put up his father's house so that it could be transferred to 35mm so that it could be played in theaters. You're like, man, that's devotion right there. I mean, I can understand, like, your friends, which is great. But still, if you're like, hey, Eric, you know, like, we want to, you know, make a small movie. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we'll take my dad's house. We'll put that up, dude. We'll double finance, you know, rock a second mortgage on that beast. And, you know, we'll have an animated feature in 3 months.
Yeah, man, that's like really, that's like true, like.
That's friendship.
Well, that's friendship and it's passion for knowing that something is going to be great.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that's just awesome right there. Yeah, everything that they did in this movie was just like meant to be. The cabin itself being where it was, and, you know, the history behind, so supposedly the history behind it being haunted and all that, but they didn't really make any too much like improvements on it besides like building a fireplace in it.
Yeah, they couldn't make that was part of their lot lease for using it, was that they could not do anything to it. I don't know how they got away with building a fireplace, because to me, okay, like if I'm saying like, yeah, you can't do any improvements, like you can't put up curtains or Venetian blinds or something, and then I'm like, yeah, you can't do any.
I bet you it's one of those things where like the property owner is like, well, you know, a fireplace would be nice.
I was gonna say, he's probably like, man, it's cold and these weirdos want to shoot this horror movie down in my place. So you know what, I'll go ahead and I'll, you know, let them do it. Now what I want to know, because they reveal it, that obviously the cabin later, they suspect that it was some teenagers that lit it on fire, messing around, and it burned down to the ground, but they did like a time capsule.
Yeah.
And hid it in the chimney.
And in the fire.
Did anybody ever find the time capsule?
I'm not sure. And that's crazy because I've always, everything that I've looked up, it's always talked about, oh yeah, we put the time capsule in the fireplace. But no one ever talks about like if they ever got the capsule or what was in it.
Yeah, the fireplace is the only thing that survived from the cabin.
Yeah.
But obviously because it's brick. But like seriously, like what was in the capsule? Did anybody ever find it? Did, like, maybe Bruce Campbell go back and retrieve it?
Any of them go back and retrieve it? Because,
yeah,
that would be really, really interesting. I mean, this movie is so great. And, of course, we're talking like, you know, the listeners have watched this movie.
Yeah.
If you haven't, it's pretty much five friends go to a cabin to pretty much stay, I'm assuming, the weekend there, because unfortunately it doesn't make it past the night. But, they go to stay, I'm assuming, the weekend. They find you get the sense that, you know, there's something in the woods, pretty much like an entity. They find a book, shotgun shells, and a tape recorder, or a shotgun and a tape recorder down there with, you know, the Hills Have Eyes poster on the wall.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was a weird, like, thing to have in the basement, but after reading what it was, a paying homage to
Wes Craven.
Wes Craven, yeah. To, you know, because what he said about Hills Have Eyes being, of course, scarier than Jaws, and Jaws being a poster that was ripped in the same film. But yeah, it was so good. But yeah, they find this book and the tape recorder of apparently, I guess it was like a research going on about the book. So they go upstairs and they go to tape it or go to listen to it. And the incantation that was said on the tape awakens pretty much an ancient evil and starts to possess, well, first possesses Cheryl, Ash's sister. And then, you know, slowly goes through the friends until the last one is Ash, and they have to try to, he has to try to pretty much survive till the morning. And he does, because now there's tons and tons of stuff. You know, there's what? Two movies and a show with him in it. So, yeah, he survives if you haven't seen it. And spoiler alert, sorry, if I ruined it for you and you haven't seen this movie. But yeah, that's pretty much what happens, and everything, you know, in this movie. Shot very low budget, but actually kickstarted off the Evil Dead franchise with Dead by Dawn, Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness, which I think that's where Ash becomes Ash, like top the character. Notch, yeah. Evil Dead 2, I think he's still kind of just Ashley Williams. And then Army of Darkness, that's when he becomes the savior, Ash, you know, and gets all the quips, the very iconic lines and all that. That's where I think he becomes
Shop Ash. Smart. Shop S Mart. Sure. Yeah. He gets his catchphrases and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where I think, you know, with the first one, you know, the second one has a very strange similar feeling to the first one. It's almost like the second one is like a reproduction of the first one.
Yeah.
With some extra added features. Like they get a little bit more into the lore of the Necronomicon.
Yeah.
And that. So, you know, the first one, I thought the first one was great. You know, I mean, but then again, it's canon. You know, it's like, you can't go wrong with Evil Dead.
Yeah, you can't go wrong
with it. I can't tell you how many times, like, I was reading in, like, the comments of, you know, how much they made in video rental fees on this movie. Yeah, I would probably put, like, $8,000 of my dad's money on the freaking Evil Dead.
Did you put your dad's house up?
Oh, I would have put it up if I could have, you know. I couldn't sign the paperwork. I was only, like, 10. But, yeah, so... But yeah, I can remember renting it all the time. And I can remember my dad like, you want that damn movie? Yeah, man, think about it. And then when part two came out, when Dead by Dawn came out and like, you know, you had the fruit cellar and all that, I was sold.
What I think was the craziest part in the movie is the, you know, the tree rape scene, man.
Yeah.
Like that's just such, and it wasn't supposed to be, it wasn't scripted. It wasn't in the. Oh, I'm not saying like the trees, like just went off script, but
hey there, lady.
No, but it wasn't originally scripted as a rape scene. It was just supposed to be pretty much like a, I guess like just the trees, like kind of like just beating her up. But it just said that she was supposed to be just attacked in the by the woods, pretty much like the trees were just supposed to attack her, kind of like in Wizard of Oz when they throw apples at her. But they kept adding to the filming and all that. And so. Finally, they, you know, they added in that rape part, and that's how she becomes possessed.
But that was one of the most memorable things. That's
what I'm saying.
You know,
it's like The Exorcist with the crucifix. Yeah,
with the crucifix. I mean, they later omitted it, and you can really only get it now, like in the director's cut and stuff. But yeah, absolutely. Like that was one of the most disturbing things from the whole film.
Yeah, that's probably like one of the that at least me because I mean I watched this when I was young too, and it's like probably one of the most craziest things that I've seen in the movie at that time, and I'm like, dude, this is wild.
Well, the whole thing for me was like being like a very artistic kid, when the demon starts taking over her and it starts, you know, she starts drawing, she draws the Necronomicon.
Yeah,
she starts etching because the demons of the woods are watching her through the window. And then if you see when she's actually drawing, like her hand, actually the veins turn all blue. And it's kind of, you know, like a precursor to what's to come in part two.
Yeah.
Where obviously, you know, the demon possesses the arm. And even like later in this film when, you know, the demon starts creeping around.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And plus, you know, now with the lore of Evil Dead and Army of Darkness and all that, it's kind of like, oh, it went after Cheryl first because that's Ash's sister. And Ash is the,
yeah, it was the bloodline.
Chosen one. Yeah. He's the chosen one to save the people and kill the Deadites. Of course, they're, at this time, they're not called Deadites, but. You know, they would be then become Deadites. But yeah, the whole scene, you know, was added. They regretted it, putting it in at first. But she actually defended it. She's like, well, dude, it's rape. It's an evil act. And what is this thing but evil? Like, come on. Like, you need this scene in there. They added the scene where decapitated Linda tries to rape Ash near the end of the film. And that's even the like got controversy and all that. But it's about, like, evil things. Like,
yeah, so it's about demons. I mean, it's not, you know, they don't come bringing you chocolate and knocking on the door, you know. It's not DoorDash, y'all. It's flipping demons here.
Demon
so.
Dash. But, yeah, I mean, it's oh, man, it's just good stuff, dude. It's just a lot of good stuff. The blood, oh, my gosh, the amount of blood, what was it?
It was Carol syrup, red food coloring. Like, they've got the
little
whole,
bit of blue.
Yeah, a little bit of blue. So that and, like, supposedly, like, the stuff was so viscousy that, like, they would make everybody ride home, like, in the trunk.
Yeah, who had blood on them.
Yeah, so they couldn't get, like, the corn syrup all over everyone. And then they had actually said that in the end scene when Ash took his shirt off after having, like, everything done, he hung the shirt to dry by the fireplace. And it solidified. And they, like chipped and broke when he went to go put it on because there was, like, like, yeah, there are just copious amounts of, like,
there was
gore.
30,000 gallons used? No, 20,000 gallons used.
I would not doubt it.
Probably, like, 20,000.
Like, half their budget was probably just Karo syrup. I mean, when you think about it.
Yeah, probably they go to the dollar store and just take a bunch of syrup.
We didn't even have dollar stores, man. This was 1979/80.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I'm a little younger.
Yeah, we didn't have dollar stores. Everything cost a dollar.
So I went down to the local Piggly Wiggly.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, I mean, dude, yeah, it's just with the budget they had, I mean, it was just, dude, it was made great. And, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what, like, how it would have been if it had a better budget. I don't think if it would have this, it would have the same, like, pull, because it is a B horror movie.
Yeah, it's a grimy movie. Like, you get a different read off of it because it doesn't have, you know, the huge, big, expansive budget.
Yeah.
So,
but for it being B horror, it had the stop motion at the end.
Yeah.
When Scott and Cheryl what's her name, Shelley. Die. And they, you know, start to disintegrate and all that, like the whole stop motion.
That's
because,
like, you got, like, a whole bunch of, like, artistic, like-minded people, though. I mean,
true, yeah.
That was kind of the cool thing about this movie is that they all were kind of like-minded. You know, even the character base, they are kind of all like-minded. Whereas when you get, like, with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it's like everyone's kind of doing their own thing.
Yeah.
You know, brother's just rolling around in a wheelchair and everyone's like, oh, man. You know, but he's not really part of the group. He's like,
yeah,
he's an outsider. And, you know, the Evil Dead is like, hey, that's my sister. This is my friend. You know.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
Scott's drinking moonshine. You know, we're all going to get together.
And party down.
Well, that was a funny thing that, like, I read, too, was the fact that in the original script, everybody was supposed to go up to the cabin. And their premise for going up to the cabin was they were all, like, going to smoke some weed, get stoned, and hang out.
Yeah, that's right.
Have,
yeah,
like, a jam sesh. And then they kind of tried it out to see if it would work well. And everybody got stoned, but everything was so weird in that cabin anyways that it just, I think it went like a bad trip. It just went south real quick.
Yeah, most likely, dude.
Oh,
I mean, that,
yeah.
The cabin already looks creepy, and, it, you know, it's so mysterious already. It's like,
yeah, being out in the middle of the woods. Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, obviously they embellished it and, you know, made more out of the creepiness of the woods than was really there. But the woods are a creepy place to begin with.
Yeah.
So a cabin in the middle of the woods, and if you're from Michigan, I mean, I understand you're close to the, you know, UP, you know, you're up there by the Upper Peninsula, yeah, you got that going on. But you come down south to Tennessee, Deliverance had already come out. You're thinking you're going to hear banjo music and, you know, John Voight blowing you kisses. Like, I don't know, man.
I mean,
that's weird.
It does, yeah. And especially if it was inspired by Texas Chainsaw too. So now you already got, like,
yeah,
dirty backwoods people are going to kill me.
Exactly. Yeah, so, I mean, they're down there. They don't know heads from tails. And, yeah.
Yeah, getting high. And then,
yeah, there's 13 of you. I understand that. But still, to, you know, to a village of backwoods people, that's nothing.
Yeah, it's just wild. Let's talk about the cellar, pretty much the main, like, kind of where every the entity kind of half of it lives. I guess you could say this is where Cheryl's being kept after she gets turned and gets thrown into the cellar, the fruit cellar. That was actually what just a hole dug into, like, because it didn't, the cabin doesn't have
it, didn't have a cellar, and they weren't allowed to obviously make you know, additions to anything in the cabin that was in the agreement. Yeah. So.
And that was had to be like a hole dug in Sam Raimi's and Raimi's garage.
In his garage.
Yeah.
So yeah, back in Michigan.
Yeah.
Which is funny because when you watch the movie, like a lot of this movie, after the 6 weeks was up and everybody like pulled out and was like, hey, I'm going back home to Michigan. Like, you know, Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi were left there. Yeah. They decided to stay and stick it out. They're like, you know, we've got to finish this. We've got to do like our reshoots. We've got to do all this stuff. So the amount of stuff that they did, like extracurricular, and then wove into the movie is just...
Because it came out to, what, 115 minutes altogether, which they thought was impressive because they thought it was going to be, like, what, 60 minutes pretty much, like an hour-long film, and it turned out to be longer.
Yeah, darn near 2 hours.
Yeah, and so, of course, they trimmed it down to, like, 83 minutes, so that way, you know, it can be actually put on the screen. But, yeah, man, I mean, just the commitment for them to just be like, no, we're going to... keep going, we're gonna finish this, we're gonna stick it out. Yeah, it's just,
yeah, we're gonna do all the post credit, we're gonna do all this stuff, like,
and the innovation of just to with some of the scenes, you know, the cellar, the actual scene of the cellar is filmed in Raimi's garage, and they made it to look like, you know,
like it was a cave, like
it was a cave,
yeah, like an old root cellar.
Actually, that would be the back room, the very very back room of the cellar, and that one they had like the, you know, the bones and stuff hanging off of it, if I remember correctly,
like a cow skull, and
yeah unless it was the work shed that they were,
well, they had down in the cellar, they had all like they had almost like medieval, you know, detention devices, like chains and stocks and stuff like that. They had some really weird stuff because, you know, it comes out later that obviously, you know, this is where, you know, the researcher, you know, his wife or whoever it was in his family got, you know, taken over by a demon.
Yeah.
And so you had to restrain them and, you know, perform your little inquisition thing down there in your root cellar. But
yeah, I mean, yeah, just everything that they filmed, digging the hole to make the cellar shots, having used, you know, making some of the shots in, you know, Raimi's garage, using some other shots, like
pulling cameras just through the woods on 2x4s,
being thrown across the pond or across the little puddle, how they shot the what going across pretty much the puddle scene is like, while Sam Raimi was filming, Bruce Campbell just pushed him to make it look like it was going over the water, which is, I mean, dude, it's like I'm saying, it's just like little stuff like that, even though it's like, oh, yeah, well, anybody could have done that. Yeah, but at the time,
you know. Nobody was doing it.
Yeah.
I can remember seeing the demon move through the woods when I was a kid, and that was, like, terrifying because you see the demon going towards the house. And, of course, they, you know, they fast forward the frame, and you go very quick. But still, the fact that it's just kind of moving, and it's, like, not moving brush or anything like that. It's not moving branches. It's just moving very quick, to me, was just, I don't know. That still terrified me when I was a kid. Yeah,
and there's so many iconic stuff in this movie. I mean, of course, the necklace that he gives to Linda, you know, and, you know, just, I don't know, just the, some of the, like, we, of course, you know, them being very young, too, so some of the stuff is, like, you know, Scott, like, not missing his line, but saying his line too early and having to step out of shot after Cheryl gets, you know, harassed by the trees, and he, like, steps out of frame. It was actually a mess up because he actually said his line too early.
Yeah, so he just excused himself from that scene. He's
left up from the scene.
But, I mean, but still it played off well because unless you read about it, you didn't really...
Yeah, you didn't know.
You didn't really catch it.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, all the makeup and stuff, you know, the stuff they use, the prosthetics, you know, just... And the eyes to make them look, like, demonic and white were, like, what? Like, little, like, thick...
They were thick, like glass contacts.
Yeah.
You could only wear them for like 15 minutes at a time.
Yeah. And, dude, like, that's, I mean, shout out to them, too. I mean.
They sacrificed for their craft. They, like, yeah, they got hurt. Yeah. So.
I mean, yeah. I think Bruce, in an interview, he said that they were wearing Tupperware over their eyes just because that's how thick it was. But it worked out. I mean, now that's the most iconic one. To use, because, like, even, I mean, I know in the 2013 one they used a more like the yellow eyes, you know, because now we can have colored contacts, of course.
Yeah.
But like you, they use the more yellow, like demonic looking eyes, which was a good touch. I like that because they use that again in Evil Dead Rise. So it's good stuff. But the white eyes are very iconic.
You make advances. I mean, you know, things improve.
Which that's what was good about it, too. In making the 2013 one, pretty much kind of the same story. Five friends go to the cabin, but the reason for this one is the you have Mia.
Mia, she's the, you know.
Oh, I'll give out the starring cast because this one was written and directed by, I don't know if I'm saying his name right. I should have looked up a video.
Fede Alvarez.
Is it Fede?
Fede.
Fede. Fede. That dude, Alvarez. Fede Alvarez. He directed this one, the 2013 one. And shout out to him because he wanted to, you know, he's known for like the, you know, CGI, 3D effects and all that. But he wanted to stay true to the practical effects like Sam Raimi did.
Yeah, he wanted to pay homage to Sam Raimi, so he kept it very practical compared to his other works.
Yeah, and when it was brought to him that they were going to do a remake, he was like, Sam Raimi was all for it. Bruce Campbell was a little
hesitant.
I don't think he wanted Ash to be replaced, which he's never going to be replaced.
You can't replace Ashley.
You can't
replace Ashley.
You can't do it. Can't put Ashley in the corner. Can't do it. But when it was brought to him, they were all for it. Bruce Campbell was like, I don't know. I don't want my character, you know, to be changed or whatever. But it was a new take on the original Evil Dead, and I think it was done actually pretty darn good. A lot of people, of course, the hardcore Evil Dead Army of Darkness fans weren't too much of a fan of it. Some were. So, I mean, but that's, you know, you're going to have hardcore fans that are like, no, you can't change this. But I liked it. I love Evil Dead. I love Ash. But this one is actually really, really good.
I want Van Halen, not Van Hagar. That's the way it reminded me of, like, reading all the comments.
Dude, the comments were wild.
I mean, Bruce Campbell didn't really want to sign off on it because, you know, he thought he was going to be replaced, like you said. But then they were like, hey, no, calm down, you know. We're leaving Ash. Yeah. Ash still, you know, he's still canon.
Sam was like, no, it's, you know, let's see what the new
film. We're going somewhere else. And then, you know, once you know, Bruce Campbell found out that Ash wasn't going to get replaced, he signed on for it. He's like, okay, cool, you know. But I don't know, man. The multitude of fans were not feeling it. They were just, they were rabid.
Like, yeah.
I remember when this movie came out because I saw it on opening day. And, you know, my wife's going to tell me that, you know, we watched it together. But I can tell you, we did not watch this movie together because she does not watch horror movies. So she said we watched it. No, I saw it opening day. And, a lot of people in the theater were just very taken aback. And they were very vocal about the fact that, oh, no, this Mia chick ain't Ash. And it ain't even the same. You know, she don't have a chainsaw for a hand. And it's just like,
I'm going to be honest. When I was, because this movie came out when I was 13.
2013, yeah.
I was the same way. I was like, I'm not going to watch this. This is not Evil Dead. Like, I am not, you know, going to watch it. I didn't watch it until later on. And I did like it. I liked it a lot. Of course, you know, at the time, still young, I'm like, dude, no, this ain't going to be no Ash. This is not Evil Dead. But it is still good. And then, of course, now I love it because I love Evil Dead Rise, and that has no Ash in there. But
It's a continuation of the story.
Yeah, and that's what I like about it. Now that I'm, you know, I'm into the lore more, I'm like, oh, dude, just imagine the branches they can take. A new hero can emerge. But, of course, you still have people that don't.
Yeah. There's still people like, well, just like, you know, some other movies that we know that had trilogies. Where, you know, 4, 5, and 6 came out, and everyone's like, yeah, that's, you know, that's canon, and there's nothing else. And then somebody else came along and gave us a weird talking alien and pod racers, and then it was like, oh, that's just hot garbage. That's not part of our lore. And so I think it's really something, you know, I think it's something I noticed very well in that franchise, which came across on this one also when I saw it, was a lot of people were just commenting about stuff, and it's like, man, you got to realize, when I'm watching a movie at 50 years old, it's not like when I'm watching a movie when I was like 8 years old.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that same connotation. It doesn't have that same power on me. What I liked about the 2013 version was it gets you, so just kind of give you a story. It's kind of the same, but they're kind of going to do an intervention on Mia.
Yeah.
Mia has overdosed. She has an addiction problem. And they're going to the woods to kind of do like this, you know, for lack of a better term, come to Jesus moment.
Yeah. So her friends, Eric, Olivia, and Natalie are, you know, with her to help her out. And her brother, David, who's been pretty much like
vacant in her life for a while since, you know, he doesn't even really know that she's had like these overdoses.
Yeah.
And that
he knows that she has a drug problem, but he didn't know how bad it was.
Yeah. He didn't know that it had taken over her whole life.
Yeah.
But to me, like watching that, just in that context of what you get introduced into, is she has demons with her already.
Yeah.
So the fact that she's getting like basically she becomes host to like these demons, because in the first one, it's like out of the blue. You know, 1981, hey, we're going. I mean, and besides Scott drinking a jar of moonshine while driving down the road, you don't have any ties to anything. But this shows that she has that addiction.
Yeah.
So her addiction, let alone like basically surfaces the fact that these demons have something to feed off of.
Yeah.
So that's what I liked about 2013 is the way that they kind of already usher you into the fact this girl's got problems.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're going to play off of it.
Yeah. I know that they've already have like, you know, kind of trauma with their mom passing. She was also kind of like psychotic.
Yeah.
She was like in a mental hospital, and, you know, Mia was left there, you know, to kind of take care of her mom and be there with her in her final days. And David, you know,
he dipped,
you know, people take trauma differently, but of course, you know,
his 6 weeks were over. Back to Michigan.
Yeah. He was gone. Or he was in Chicago. That's where he was.
Yeah. He was
at a garage in Chicago. That's right. Chicago, yeah.
Yeah. Because the first one is supposedly, in Tennessee.
Yeah, that's in Tennessee.
And
yeah.
The second one is Illinois.
Yeah.
So.
But, yeah. So they're going to, try to help her out, help her get sober. And she makes an oath, like, hey, which, you know. If you know any addicts, they do make oaths, they make promises. You just gotta
follow the steps.
Yeah, you gotta follow the steps. Don't jump into
number 9. Yeah. Start begging for forgiveness.
Yeah. So she's going to make those, you know, these promises, and, you know, shout out to her friends for helping her, man. It's kind of hard to deal with, you know, if you know anybody who's an addict or if you were one, it's tough for the people around you, but, you know, you stick through it and you get through the hard times, you know, you'll come out at the other end and be good. The problem with this one is there's demons at the other end of this tunnel. And she makes a promise, dumps her, I'm assuming her, I don't know what drugs it was, and she dumps it down the well, and which is their drinking water.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Which I was kind of, at first, I'm like, dude, that's like, y'all are going to be pulling water out of that. Just dump it down there and get everybody.
Get a little taste.
So she dumps it down the well, and, you know, so starts the cold turkey mission, you know, journey. And they go from there. They do find stuff in the basement of this cabin as well. And this cabin is their family cabin. It's David and Mia's. Like, that's where they grew up, you know, going to.
Yeah, so she has, like, her own room, which...
Yeah, they have their own room.
Which remains intact. I mean, I don't know
after all these years, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how that works exactly in a log cabin in the middle of the woods. Yeah. I'm not, you know.
Yeah, but, the cabin is, their families, but at the beginning of the film, you see that there was, like, some kind of, this girl gets taken by these two dudes, taken to the basement of this cabin, and, they're saying there's a demon in her, and her dad has to try to give her peace, and he lights her on fire, and the demon exposes itself, finally. Because at first, like, oh, this dude's about to kill his daughter, just for nothing. Like,
some crazy stuff going on in the woods.
Yeah, and then it comes to show that it is a demon.
Yeah, if you pause it at, 2 minutes and 30 seconds or something like that, like, when the fire starts on her, you see the demon in the flames.
Yeah, and that's what's cool about it, too. Now, there's little details cool.
There were little, hidden Easter eggs throughout it.
Yeah, besides, the references to, obviously, Evil Dead and all that with the double-barrel shotgun and all that. But, yeah, it's cool little stuff like that that I do like about this movie. And what I noticed, too, about, all the Evil Dead films is they all have the same feel. Like, Evil, you know, the first one, the second one, even Army of Darkness, it has a different feel, obviously, because it's more of a action. It's more action than it is, horror comedy. There's more action than anything, so it has a different feel. But like I noticed even with the remake and the 2018 one, especially with the show, they all have the same energy, like the same feel to them. The camera angles are, you know, they still have like the tilted kind of camera angles going towards like the woods and stuff like that. Like it just all has the same feel.
Yeah,
that's what I like about it, is the consistency of, even with different directors, it still has the same like feel.
Even in different, like you're saying with Evil Dead, you know, obviously like, and you know, Army of Darkness, Evil Dead Rise came through and you're thinking, oh, because it's like, you know, in a cityscape now, it's, you know, it's not going to have the same feel, but it does.
Yeah.
Because it restricts you to that one little area.
Yeah.
You know, you get a little parking structure in Evil Dead Rise. I'm not going to like spoil it for everyone. But
that would be the,
you don't really come off that one floor. You don't come out of that one cabin.
Yeah, that would technically be the cellar.
All comes to the one place. It's like, you know, it doesn't branch out. You're not, you know, running down the street. It's not, you know, Godzilla versus Mothra where you're like just jamming it up on Tokyo.
Yeah.
It's really centralized. And that's where you get that real creepy, you know, just almost imprisoned feel.
Yeah. And you know, sticking with the theme, I mean, with Evil Dead, you know, the 2013 one, yeah, I mean, just, I'm glad they didn't, you know, he didn't expand, you know, try to go like, okay, we're going to do, you know, the cabin, and then we'll do, like, another house or whatever. I'm glad they kept it.
Or they'll get away, and, yeah, like they'll get over the bridge, and then they'll go into the city, and they'll stop by the sheriff's office, and the demons will grab the sheriff, you know, like so many horror movies do.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm glad it just stayed in pretty much. I mean, the only thing more that you get of is, now I would say not really more of, but I mean, the woods, I guess you kind of get a better feel of the way they look and how they, you know, how creepy it is.
The newer ones, you do get more of a story on, you get more character development, I would say.
Yeah, you do.
Like,
yeah.
You definitely, like in this movie, like, you definitely meet every character individually of themselves, above how they like factor into Mia's life. So that they do actually do. Whereas, you know, the first one, you know, you had Scott kind of feel like Scott's just, you know, he's kind of there to try and get lucky. You know, that's kind of the read I got off of Scott. You know, yeah. He's like the football guy. And that, you know, Ash was kind of like the, I mean, he's still ruggedly handsome.
Yeah.
But he was like, you know, like the poet guy, the guy who would like read poetry. I mean, he's giving you a looking glass. You know, and that's another thing I did like about, you know,
the looking glass had a meaning to it.
Yeah, and when you see it, it's like actually in the shape of a skull.
Oh yeah, and, like it was in the first movie.
Yeah, it's like it's in the shape of a skull, and so it's kind of cool because, yeah, they tied that together. He used a lot of inspiration from the original to pull into the new one, but once again, he made a new story.
Yeah.
You know, using, you know. But he built a new building using the old foundation.
Yeah, and I like how when they do discover the book in the basement, in the cellar, it's like wrapped in plastic, and then it's like wrapped in barbed wire.
Yeah,
to keep it bound, like no one can open this. But of course,
Eric, you know, he's got to cut into it and figure out, because you know he's inquisitive. He's a teacher.
Yeah, but I do like the addict aspect. You know, her kind of, you know, losing it because she's having withdrawals. Of course, she's kind of, you know, being frantic. She's, you know, obviously she needs her fix, but of course they're not going to give it to her. So she starts saying stuff, and I like using that aspect because when the demons do start showing up and things start going down, they're just like, oh, dude, she's just going to try everything in her power to get out of here, to leave this cabin. We're not going to let her. Like, she's going to say anything, even though stuff is actually happening and nobody believes it. That was a good way to tell the story, too. So I like that. But, yeah, Eric has to, you know,
got to cut that barbed wire and do all that, you know. And, you know, that's the reason that his lady fair perishes.
Yeah, that's his fault, though, man.
Yeah.
That is his fault. And okay, it tells you in the book, like, the people before you who read the book too and unleashed the evil and then finally put it back in, they scribbled out the incantation so you don't say it. You know, they warn you, do not read this or he will come looking for you. And he's still like, oh, you know, let me just pull this paper off. I can find the incantation if I just scribble over it. And I'm like, dude, really? Like, you're going to try that hard to mess with, like, this witchcraft stuff, like this demonic stuff? So he says the incantation when Mia's outside, like circling around, because obviously she's having withdrawals. She's out in the rain doing circles in the front yard. And
like you do.
Of course, you get the iconic, you know, demon, the entity going through the woods, the POV of the entity going through the woods and taking her, like possessing her. Of course, she thinks she's just, you know, having her just withdrawals.
Yeah, she doesn't know what's real and what, you know, what's real and what's just, yeah. You know.
Well, she sees a girl out there, you know, that looks, I mean, looks just like her.
Yeah.
And all bloodied and demonized, dead-eyed. Dead-eyed? Yeah, dead-eyed.
Dead-eyed? Yeah, that's it.
But, yeah, so she freaks out. And she's like, I can't do this anymore. Her friends are like, dude, you're not leaving. And David backs her up because she's like, David, take me home. You're my brother. Like, you have to help me.
Yeah, it's just like when they try to get Ash to take him home in the first one. Not, you know, not going to happen.
Yeah, so he says no. And, of course, she tries to get away. And same thing happens to her. She gets the... Except this one was doing more like, I don't know how to say it, like just supernatural, I guess you could say. I mean, trees coming alive is crazy either way, but she gets in the thorn bush.
Yeah.
And she gets tangled up, and then you see the same thing wrapping around her arms, her legs. Except this time she sees that same demon version of herself spit out this like thorn, like slug.
Slug, yeah.
And, of course, it goes right up her leg, up inside of her, and now she is possessed. And stuff starts going wrong pretty quick. And that's what I liked about this movie. Of course, the first one, you know, you still have a, you know, you get, not a lot, but, you know, it's quite a bit to get to them being possessed and stuff like that. This one kind of gets into it pretty quick. It goes into, you know, them being possessed or her being possessed and then, you know, the gore, the blood and all of that.
Yeah, and it's got plenty of that. Yeah.
And they're not stupid either. Thank God. They're not like, no, man, she's... Like, at first they're like, you know, man, she's just a druggie. Like, she's an addict. That's why she's acting like this.
I don't know. Eric's pretty stupid, man.
Yeah, Eric is pretty stupid from reading to that. Well, that's my thing, too. Okay, so he's, like, pissed off that David's there because he hasn't seen them in, like, you know, years, right?
Yeah, he's like, I've been here for them the whole time, and where the hell have you been? And now you're just appearing, and you're going to be, like, the knight in shining armor?
Yeah. So it's he's like, pissed off. But it's like, dude, you released this thing. Like, it's your fault. So when people start dying, like, his girl dies. His girl gets possessed because they're, you know, Mia starts getting violent. She shoots David in the arm with a shotgun. And, you know, they throw her into the cellar and, you know, lock her in there. And Olivia is a nurse. So she goes to get a sedative. Like, dude, I gave her, like... Much
enough to put a horse down.
Yeah.
And she's still out here like kicking rocks.
Yeah. So like, David's like, well, get another one. Like, stick her with another one. Like, she's like real violent. She goes to get, you know, that. And you see her version in the mirror in the bathroom. And the Necronomicon, pretty much the Book of the Dead, pretty much flips to like each page is like what's going on with Mia and.
Yeah. It's playing Olivia. Itself out.
Yeah, and so she starts, like, cutting her face up in the restroom, and Eric finds her and freaks out, and she attacks Eric, and, of course, he puts her down. He was real quick to put her down.
He was. I don't think there was any love lost on that, especially not when she started stabbing him with the needle.
Oh, dude.
And
that
was, like, yeah, that was literally, like, me and my son were watching it, and I, like, turned to him, and I'm like, there's no way your mom and I saw this in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, no way. She would not have watched, because basically he gets stabbed in the face with a syringe. And then the needle breaks off, like, right next to his eye.
Yeah.
Like, she's hitting his glasses. You can hear it hit the glasses.
Yeah.
And that was another great part about this movie. Like, the level and intensity of the gore was, I'm a gore hound. I was like, yeah, this is great. And then he, like, literally, like, you can't leave that needle floating around by your eye. So he, like, reaches in and pulls it out.
Slow, yeah.
Like, yeah. It was like a Wu-Tang skit. Just on, it was great. Like, I don't know. I just liked it.
It was good, man. Yeah. And Eric does get his. I want to say deserved because, dude, you did release this.
Yeah, he got his just desserts. Like, come on, you know, man. Yeah.
Like, but yeah, he gets stabbed in the eye. He gets shot. No, he gets shot by a nail gun.
Yeah.
Cut by a box cutter. I mean, he's just stabbed, shot, and. But I mean, dude, you did release these demons, like. It's your fault.
Yeah, exactly. You didn't release the Care Bears. You released the freaking demons from the book.
Yeah, and it's just, yeah, weird. So they have to try to stop her because Eric finally tells David, like, hey, you have to kill your sister in order for all this to stop. like, you need to start killing her. And his girlfriend that he brought, Natalie, she gets bitten because she's, like, trying to help, you know, of course, needle-faced, just got, like, stabbed by glass and stabbed in the face with a needle. So he's, like, in the work shed trying to help him out. Natalie goes in to get, like, the, you know, the first aid kit. And, of course, Mia is like, oh, no, I'm fine now. Like, why'd y'all lock me in the basement? Of course, trying to tease her or, like, you know.
Yeah, trying to lure her in. Yeah. Yes.
And she succeeds. And, of course, gets her down there, bites her hand. Luckily, David comes and saves her.
Yeah, but Natalie's also, like, just mad stupid.
Yeah.
So
okay, yeah.
She takes the first step in there, and the step, like, bows. I mean, it, like, flexes. It's like, and she's just like, oh, well, let me keep going. Why do you keep recessing into the darkness? Dude, that's when you're just like, yo, you good? Okay. I'll see you tomorrow morning.
Yeah, lock you up.
Check you later. You know, that's what you do. No, she goes down there, and of course, you know, Mia's just laid a trap. So she runs up the stairs and, like, grabs her and then, like, hurts her leg. She goes to get out, and then she grabs a basically like an extending box cutter.
Yeah.
And rather than stabbing
Mia.
That was
a good part, too, yeah.
Yeah, Mia, but then Mia gets the upper hand, and she grabs the box cutter. Then she takes the box cutter, and she extends the blade out like 8 clicks, and then licks the blade and, like, splits her tongue in half. And I'm just like, wow. Like I said, that was a great scene.
Yeah, that's great stuff, man. And, of course, you know, Natalie with her bitten hand now.
Yeah, but she still, you know, she still gets out.
Yeah, which is a reference to Evil Dead 2. She gets her hand bitten, and she turns, like, her hand starts turning, and she, like, needs to cut it off, so she gets that meat saw.
Yeah, because for some odd reason, why? That's a one thing about this movie that confused the hell out of me. So they go to the woods. Like, the first one, like I said, like, maybe they had potato chips. I don't know. I don't remember. But they were, like, you know, they had, like, moonshine. They had grain alcohol. They had, like, stuff that teenagers would take someplace.
Yeah.
This one, they're like, oh, yes, you're coming in for, like, rehab. This is your rehab facility. Let's make a beef Wellington. There's, like, a whole, like, rare beef Wellington.
Oh, that's right.
That they're cutting on. I'm like, what the? Who the hell goes to a cabin in the middle of the woods and cooks, like, beef Wellington? I mean, when I go camping, I'm like, you know, maybe some top ramen. Maybe, you know, like, an MRE. Like, you know, we're messing with, like, pre-made food here. I'm not, yeah, like, you know, oh, you know, let's get the braised pork cutlet or, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I've cooked, like, you know, bacon, stuff like that. But, like, yeah, that's, like, you know, just regular stuff, like a steak, chicken, whatever. They're like, no, we're going to actually make a...
and you realize when people are going through withdrawal, like, their senses kick off.
Yeah.
So, like, you can hear things that you couldn't normally hear. Like, all your senses just flood because the rush, the dopamine is, like, leaving. So you're just, like, stranded. So you can hear things. You can see things. That's why you'll hallucinate. You smell things. You're going to cook a beef Wellington that's probably going to smell like raw, like,
ass.
Big ass. And you know, in the middle of a cabin.
And then you're going to saw it.
Yeah. You're going to saw it, you know, with not just, you know, like a regular knife, you know, not the steak knife. No, you're going to use the, you know, the electric knife, you know, from the Betty Crocker edition from, like, 1982. Like, I don't know. That's the only part that I was just like, dude, this feels fishy.
Yeah.
No pun intended. Yeah. I was like, this just feels bad.
Yeah, that was, yeah, it's just, yeah. So anyway, so yeah, she, that whole part where she cuts her tongue.
But she doesn't successfully cut her arm off.
She cuts her arm,
yeah. She like cuts it, but then it's still like dangling.
Yeah, because they walk into the kitchen and she's like, I had to do it.
I had to do it. And it's like still holding on by like, you know, like 7 layers of epidermis. She's like, I had to do it. No, man, if you've already gone through that much, you know, like that 40 hours in the canyon or whatever the hell movie that was.
Oh, yeah.
You've already cut your damn arm off.
27 hours?
Whatever it was. Like, just grab it. You ain't going to hurt anymore if you just pull the skin off.
Yeah, you're already in pain. Or your body's probably rushing.
Yeah, it's probably dumping adrenaline. You've probably already adrenaline dumped like 7 times. Just pull it off. Like, now the big thing is, you know, you have to get it off because you have to, like, plug that gaping hole on the side of your body somehow.
Maybe it's like that little skin you get on your fingers. You got to peel it off.
Nah,
and it hurts
hell. Nah,
I
just... Yeah, but if you already sawed your finger off.
True, yeah.
You got a hangnail. Who cares?
Yeah, so she does that. She turns, of course. They all turn, man, unfortunately. But yeah, like the effects of the blood and all that. I mean, the kills, the, you know, the nail gun being shot through each of their arms and stuff like that. And
That's graphic.
Yeah, Eric getting lit up.
Yeah. Dude, you can't tell by our conversation, Eric gets smoked.
Yeah, he gets smoked pretty bad. He gets cut, yeah.
Well, the funny part about it is, if, like, I read this and I didn't notice this either. If you take the first initial of each of the players' first names, it actually spells demon.
Demon, yeah.
So I was like, wow, that's, you know, that's so thoughtful. Like, that's just, you know, the way they just brought that together. And they don't tell you that, and it just all kind of falls into place.
Yeah. Yeah. So Eric tells him, like, hey, you need to either burn her or bury her alive or dismember her.
Yeah.
You know, in order to, you know, pretty much get rid of the thing that's living in her. So he's like, well, I don't want to shoot. I don't want to burn her, and I don't want to dismember her. So I'm going to bury her alive, and then I'm going to make a makeshift, like, what is it, defibrillator, and pretty much try to bring her back. And so he does that. And of course, the thing is, like, talking to him in, like, her voice, but then finally switches up when,
like, it was in the cellar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he buries her alive. And she doesn't come back, unfortunately. When she does, he does bring her back out until, you know, he walks away and she's, you know, hey, it's a me.
It's a Mia.
So she's okay. She is no longer possessed. Everything's good. And then he goes inside. He's like, we're going to get the keys. We're going to get out of here. Like, screw our friends. We'll come back for their bodies later. And, dude, even I forget about Eric sometimes. So he dies in the basement, and I'm like, oh dude, that sucks. Like, he's, you know, he's gone. He, at least he helped David and told him that he missed him and all that, but then he comes back as a deadeye,
yeah,
and stabs David straight in the neck. And I'm like, oh, that's right, I forgot he's not fully dead now.
He's down there being a ham bone. He just, yep.
So yeah, he gets stabbed, and of course David sacrifices himself to pretty much end it. But Eric had told him earlier that it needs, you know, 5 souls. Well, technically, it had already taken, I guess technically it would have already taken Mia.
Yeah.
So David and Eric die, and so.
And upon the completion, the blood rain will start.
Yeah, blood rain. It's raining blood from the lacerated skies.
So Mariah shows up. He's in the woods holding it down. Kerry King is the tree. Yeah.
So yeah, it starts raining blood, literally, not just because of the song.
The Slayer album's amazing.
Yeah. So it's raining blood, and I can't say that without thinking about Slayer. So yeah, it's pouring blood. And because of that, the demon is going to rise from the, you know, the earth and, you know, pretty much be reborn, I guess you could say. So it doesn't, and it's her, like the demon is her. It's like
it was like her demonically possessed self, like, yeah, comes back. So
yeah, and so she comes back, and you know, they go at it, you know. So Mia runs into the shed, of course. You got to get the chainsaw, and she fills it up with gas. Well, kind of fills it up with gas, and she drops the cap to the it's to the gas tank, right? She drops the cap.
Yeah.
Doesn't close it, and she's, like, throwing this thing around. Like, dude, you would have dumped, like, half the tank out already, like, and you didn't even pour in the full tank.
And the blood would have mixed with the gasoline also, which would have, you know, kind of affected the performance.
Yeah.
But it's demon's blood, man. It might have that high, like, you know, might be like 98 premium or something. <Yeah. laughs>
Two-stroke blood.
Exactly.
So, yeah, so, of course, they have a good battle. And what's pretty cool, too, is, like, her demon self grabs a machete, and she has the chainsaw, goes under the Jeep that's parked in front of the work shed, and cuts off her legs, the demon's legs. Which is pretty cool. But the demon, having strength, flips the Jeep over and landing on her arm.
Yeah.
You know, of course, because you got to pay homage to when Ash took his own arm off. Gets caught under the Jeep, and she has to rip it off in order to grab the chainsaw. And so she does, and ends up killing the demon in one of the most graphic ways. Dude, that was great. You know, pretty much shoving it in her throat, like, yeah, down her face, and cutting her in half from top to bottom. That was pretty cool, man.
Yeah, Art the Clown had nothing on this one. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. Art
the Clown went, like, you know, he went graphic, man. He went, you know, he went female version, then he went male version.
He went balls deep, literally.
Yeah. Balls flying.
Yes. But yeah, dude, I mean, just the way the kill, the end kill of the demon was just brutal. And I'm like, yeah, this is pretty good. I like this a lot. But yeah, I mean, dude, it was great. I loved it. Now I love it. Then when it first came out, I didn't, because of course.
I think it's, you know, I think it's one of those movies that when you watch it the first time, I can say if you're like a fan of the original three and you watch it, it's a little distasteful. Like, you do get, like, it's a little abrasive.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, I don't know. I don't know if I want. But then if you watch it again, if you, like, put your grudge aside and you revisit it, yeah, you'll get something more out of it. And when you see, you know, especially the way that they are pulling it back to the original trilogy.
Yeah.
They are paying homage. They're not doing what a lot of people are doing, you know, being very dismissive of the canon.
Yeah.
They do go through and they do honor it. And then, of course, like through the show, which comes out later, they kind of start to tie into the fact that, you know, it's kind of like different timelines. There's different, you know, levels of the Necronomicon and stuff yeah. like that. And so that, you know, that gives a little bit more of an ease to it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, both were really good films. Yeah, I understand where people who are, you know, canon restrictive are like, no, I'm not going to watch that new stuff. You know, unfortunately, you know, I don't think Bruce Campbell's going to come out with another three films. So
he does make an appearance at the end of the movie, at the end credits.
He does. Yeah.
He just says groovy. That's groovy. All he says.
That's it.
Yeah, the very, very end credit, like the final scroll of the credits, he's at the very, very end.
Yep.
And he just says groovy. That's all he says, which I get it. You know, I mean,
yeah.
you gotta give them a little bone. You gotta give the fans a bone.
You gotta pass the torch. Yeah, yeah, you gotta pass the torch. Like, there's nothing wrong with having, you know, like an Ash collaboration or something. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't think anyone from the new franchise is like totally against that.
Yeah, no.
Like, you'd have to be like a complete dimwit to be like, no, I don't want Ash anywhere in the, like, yeah. No. But, you know, I also don't, you know, really agree with the fact that, you know, everything has to be presented to me as like I have a 7-year-old mind, and
no, that's, yeah,
that's what I'm gonna buy into.
But I think if, and I'm not gonna say any particular, you know, franchise or anything like that, but I think if there's already a lot of lore built up to change it with new movies, I think that's what like kills the fans. Like, that's what like takes your fan base away.
Yeah,
because you already have hardcore fans who have kids that are making them hardcore fans. But then you go and you change the lore because of some dumb reason, you know, whatever it may be. It's like, okay, that's where you lose your fan base, because now you're not taking consideration that this franchise already has a lot of stuff in it. It already has a storyline. It already has lore. It has people that like know everything from like even like stuff that's like the books that are written about this.
All lore. The comic books. Yeah. All the fan fiction. All that. Yeah.
Yeah. So like stuff like that. Like, that's what. But I think with Evil Dead, I mean, it's pretty simple. I mean, you kill Deadites, and you're, you know, you have Ash as the savior. And if you make another storyline like with Evil Dead Burns, a lot of people didn't like that either. I loved Evil Dead Burns, or Evil Dead Rise. Right. Sorry, Evil Dead Burns is going to come out next year. So hopefully that'll have the same feel, and I hope it's a good storyline too, with or without Ash. I mean, hey. I'm still an Evil Dead fan, so
maybe we can ask him at Frightmare. Hey, what's the story, man?
So what's up, man? Yeah. Yeah.
You're gonna be, you know, gonna be in the next one, man? Gonna be in Burn? Like, you're gonna like pop up and be like, you know, shop smart, shop S Mart. I don't know.
They need to throw an S Mart in there, man. I have not seen an S Mart. Even in the show it wasn't an S Mart. It was like a different store. But yeah, they need to throw in an S Mart in one of these movies. They're doing a Henrietta in Evil Dead Rise.
Yeah.
So
they got done
something, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, but both movies are great, man. Of course, the 2013 pays a lot of respect and homage to, you know, the old one, the original one. It's a good movie to see. I mean, go check it out if you haven't. If you're holding out just because you're a hardcore fan, just drop it, man.
You know, give them a pass for a day.
Give it a chance.
One more, you know.
You're afraid you're going to like it?
Exactly. You can delete your browser history afterward, yeah. You know. Go ahead and throw. I forget where I watched it. I didn't watch it on Tubi. It was it Vudu? I can't remember. I forget who had it for free this past week, and it was just out there. Yeah. But, I mean, I have the DVDs anyways, but I was like, oh yeah. You know.
Yeah, I have it now. I own it too. But yeah, just come on, man. Just drop it. You know, there's always going to be Ash, man. Exactly. Just, you know, give it a try.
So many things being done with the current state of movies that we can just all hate on. So yeah. There's enough hate going
on. This doesn't need to be hate. Hate. Yeah. Even with, with this one, the Evil Dead Rise, the new one that's coming out next year, if it doesn't have Ash, man, don't worry about it. As long as there's a good storyline and you have deadites and you have blood and gore and somebody who's being a badass. That's all I want.
And a book covered in human skin.
And a book covered in human skin. See, that's what I liked about. Okay, obviously they're still the same. The 2013 one didn't really have a. I'm gonna be honest, it didn't have a good like Necronomicon.
No,
it was just a book bound in flesh, which is cool.
Yeah.
Obviously the original one.
It looked kind of like a bologna sandwich kind of thing to me. Like yeah. It kind of looked like processed lunch meat.
Yeah.
Like it did, because the first one. I mean. In their defense, the first one looked kind of like, it was all raised up. It looked like maybe the guy's skin was Captain Crunch or like Cocoa Puffs or something. Yeah. Like it was all bubbly and the eyeball was there. But, it came alive and it had the mouth and the teeth. Yeah. It looked like a Fuggler doll,
Yeah.
So it was cool. But then, the one that, that was a little lackluster, the one, kind of looked like,
I get they were trying to make it look more like skin, and I guess you want to do something a little original. You don't want to have. But, add something, man. Add like a mouth
some
or just
stitches.
Stitch. Well, it had stitches.
It had some excessive stitches and it looked kind of wet for being all wrapped up. It looked kind of moist.
It looked like when you leave bacon out for a little long and it starts to brown.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah, they could have thrown an eye in there or something, or even
I think that would have been a good touch.
Yeah.
Because in mine, I think my favorite one would have to be, of course, Evil Dead 2. It's just the iconic one. But I think next to that would have to be Rise. Rise had a good one with the teeth on the side of it.
Yeah.
Closing the book. That one was pretty cool. That, add some variety to it, Yeah, put an eye or something, or put an ear or a toenail.
I don't know. Maybe Eric, maybe he took that off. Maybe he found it to be offensive. So when he found it, he was like, nope, I got to change this.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. But yeah, that was our review over the two movies, Evil Dead 1981 and Evil Dead 2013. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And please tell us what you thought about, the first one or the remake or reboot or sequel, because there's no.
Or if you're a purist and you just hate what we're saying, let us know that. We love the feedback.
Yeah, and if you love Bruce Campbell and Ash is the only Ash there's ever going to be. Give us a groovy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but we hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much again for listening. Again, spread us around to your family, friends, and strangers. And, we will see you
next week.